You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
We are actuaries. In a world filled with unpredictability, we use our math skills to navigate uncertainty. Actuaries make a difference in people's lives across industries and the world. Actuaries have the freedom to work anywhere. And according to U.S. News & World Report, we're the 25th top-paying career. Make an impact as a fact-seeker and a truth-teller. Use your math skills for good as an actuary. The world needs you.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to our Sequester Recap Podcast. I'm your host, Trent Armstrong, and I am here today to talk to you guys about episode 7 of Sequester Season 4. With me tonight is Asia. How you doing, Asia?
Hey, Taryn. I'm doing well. Just to set the stage, I am a new Sequester watcher as of this season. I've always seen the chatter about the minis and then the previous seasons, but I just never just took the time to get into it. So season 4, I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get into it. And I'm so hooked. Like, I'm definitely going to go back and watch all the previous seasons. But yeah, I'm doing well.
All right. Also joining me here tonight is Brendan. How you doing, Brendan?
I'm doing very, very well. Same for me. Actually, I never watched any of the other seasons, but after being involved in the minis last year, I jumped into this one, and it's been awesome. I've enjoyed every minute of it, and it's really been filling that void that we've had with some different shows not coming back, and it's been great.
Yeah, for sure. Brendan actually played in the Sequester mini that I played in, and then he went to play as well with some of the people on this cast, including Muna herself.
Yes. Yeah. No, the mini, one of the minis, I don't know if she won another one, but the one definitely when the one that we played together, she won the mini, and yeah, she was great. So yeah, it's been fun to be able to see, I was saying some of the stuff. I feel like the show has done a good job of telling the story overall without it, but yeah, there's definitely been some great context that's been added through some of the experience I had with the minis that I've both watched and then also, and then, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's funny because like I never watched a full mini, but the one mini I did watch was the one where you were final two with.
Oh, yes.
Is that one you were final two with Muna?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. The final two with Muna, but
okay. Which one did you make final two? That's the one that I watched the final two, and I saw, you know, y'all talking to the jury and stuff, and I was like, okay, this show is kind of good. But it's crazy, like of all the minis, I know there were a ton. That was the only one I watched, like the final two.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I mean, this week was not unlike a lot of final two. I mean, this week was like 6 final two pitches.
Right.
7 final two pitches. So that was kind of wild, funny to see. Kind of got a taste of what everyone, how they would speak to the jury this week.
Yes, for sure. This was an interesting episode. For me overall, it was kind of another disappointing twist result, but I did enjoy the beginning of the episode where we get set up here. First, we're going to see that Muna, who just won her battle match against Brendan, sent him home, comes back into the game. She has to go through Luxury Row first, and I believe she has a 1-in-3 chance at grabbing some kind of power. I don't know if it's going to be the same one that Jacob had that he used, that if like the battle pass or whatever it's called, or if it would be some kind of different power.
I thought that's what I heard, that Jacob's battle pass was going back in. Okay. I thought, but I don't, you know, I didn't rewatch, but I believe that's what they said. But
That's what I understood as well, that it was going back in, that that would be the power that's won.
That, I mean, that would make sense. I mean, man, if she had gotten that,
I know. Well, that's what I thought power. When I was watching it. I was like, wow, like if she pulled this out at Final Seven, that's like, oh.
So then she comes back and you just know that, you know, Jacob and Marcelo and Natalie and probably Josh and, you know, pretty much everyone except for Billy is just like, please not move. And you could even you could totally tell, sometimes people come back and there's like real applause. Like people, even if they were like, I didn't want this person to come back, they're like, oh, I'm happy for this was like. Oh, jeez. Oh,
man. It was like their worst nightmare came true, especially Jacob. I mean, the way she went into that battle match was like there was no way he was going to want her to come back. Because, I mean, sometimes when, you know, Spencer has gone to the battle match, at least there was some kind of like people thinking, OK, well, we think he's going to come back. So we know that we're going to try to like talk to him when he returns. It was as if they didn't think there was a chance that Muna would win.
Yeah. And I think the overall reception, like response to it's like, I feel like it's like, it's indicative of it getting later in the game. You know, I feel like the beginning of the game, things are so wide open that whoever comes back in, you want to put on that show of like, oh yeah, no, I'm so happy you're back. Let's work together. Where I feel like now that we're getting down to it, it's like, there's certain people that people have just crossed too much or have boxed out. And so, yeah, they really, the battle matches, like some people really don't want certain people to come back because they're trying to lock something in.
Yeah. So Muna comes back, of course, you know, speech time.
Is this a typical thing? Like, do people always give a speech when they return from the battle match, or that's like this season?
This season it certainly has been. I can't remember it being as much of a thing in previous seasons, but I could be wrong. I do know that in previous seasons, I occasionally would feel like, all right, there's a bit of too much speeching happening. I feel like that was mostly like in the final two or like, you know, near the end. I don't remember it being like in every episode.
It's like if you come back now and you don't have a speech, it's like, whoa, what are you doing? Yeah. Like,
there was a whole thing going on between Billy and Marcelo in that moment that didn't even seem to be like coming through. It was like we had the initial thing that was happening, and then that was like happening in the background. It was like sort of tuned out. I was like,
I do want to say back about that. So I was not a huge fan of the massive like argument when Jacob and Spencer were voted out together and it just turned into like a 20-minute like all out brawl where we saw every single piece of the argument. And I personally felt like this argument felt a lot better to me in terms of how it was edited, where we saw some of the fighting and then kind of like music cues came in. We saw that they were still yelling, but we didn't hear what they were saying, which is fine. Cause when people argue, usually the what they're saying doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? They end up repeating themselves a bunch of times. And then like cutting back to like Jacob and Muna, you know, moments that they had together and like the friendship that they had talked about, you know, intercut with them screaming at each other. That's everything that I felt was missing from the previous like massive argument, because it really provided the proper context and emotional weight behind what was actually happening. And I did also, as Brendan points out, love that Billy and Marcelo are also yelling at each other in the background. Right.
That was, I was literally watching that, and I know we were hearing like either Muna or Jacob talking in their confessional, but I was like, I want to hear what Billy is saying. Like, I want it all.
And of course, I believe it was before this fight happens that we get the sort of overnight package.
Yeah.
Where Billy is, I believe how it goes is that she's initial, because at first I was like, what is she doing? Like, she's like going up and down. I didn't realize she was jump roping yet. And then they kind of pan out and she's jump roping. And then she does like a turn and look into the camera. It was It was incredible.
It's the first ever jumping rope confessional in any social transit. I mean, I don't know.
It really, like, I think I even said this on my stream last night, but it really brought me back to Poppin' Paul Jackson from Big Brother Canada when he's looking at himself in the mirror and he's like, I've got to be the villain. Like, it really right? gave me that same energy.
Yeah.
Yes, I love Billy's intensity. Like, it is so entertaining. I wouldn't expect anything less from her at this point. I mean, we haven't gotten anything like that from anyone else that's like overnight. I was like, what's the context here? What's the timing? How late was this? Because it was like I haven't seen anything else like that this season. I was like, of course, Billy is zoned in. And then you hear her later say, like, I didn't sleep last night. I didn't sleep. Yeah. I was thinking about this.
She was busy jump roping.
And we believe, and we've seen the proof. So, like, that was not a, you know, some people say that dramatically. Like, I didn't sleep. It's like, we saw her, like, middle of the night.
I talked.
It should have been a timestamp.
Yeah.
It should have been like a 2 a.m. timestamp.
It should have got to everybody else sleeping, right? And then it got to Billy. Like,
it would have tied in perfectly when Marcella later talks about like how many jumping jacks he can do, right? Like,
yeah, that's right. Right. Was she right? Maybe she was just doing those jumping. Yeah, that was a real twist. Those are two very different things. So it's like, I did all these right. jumping jacks, and he's like, actually, jump roping. Oh, I know. I was like, oh,
right. Now I don't believe you, Marcelo. Now I don't believe you at all.
Well, you had the jump rope, though. So maybe.
Yeah. True.
All right. So Billy is ready to go. She has a mask on. And then I don't think this ever even came up after this moment, but she takes the mask off and she's got like a grill on. like a golden grill. I don't think she wears it for the whole episode, though.
No, it was just in at that moment. I think it was just her being in the zone. She probably does wear it more often, obviously, outside of Sequester, since she is a music artist. Like, is she a rapper or does she sing? Okay. So, yeah, it's probably part of her persona. And she was like, if there's any time, I'm going to bring it out. If I'm going to bring the grill out, I'm going to bring it out now because I'm pissed. So,
yeah. I think what's been cool about her, though, what you're saying is like that she's had this great intensity and this great fire, but it doesn't seem to have like alienated her socially at all. Like, she's done this amazing thing of having this passion and this fire without really becoming a big, you know, target in the house or becoming someone who is. Yeah, it's been interesting to watch that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think that especially because I think the audience has become a little polarized on it. But I think that in the house, when you're with these people, you know, her intensity is about which frustrates the audience, but it's about her loyalty, which makes people like feel good about you. When you are a loyal person who is very passionate, people feel very comfortable with you because, you know, you may be, you know, going off on someone or like, you know, wearing a mask ready to go. But you're often doing that for the people you ride with. And that makes you feel very, very comfortable. It makes you feel protected, makes you feel like I've got this person. They've got my back. And so, you know, just because you look at it from an audience perspective and you're like, can she stop talking about loyalty, please, in a game about lying and backstabbing? That's the thing about these shows is that the audience often doesn't want to see loyalty, but loyalty is such an effective strategy.
Right.
For at least one person, right?
Yeah. Right. Exactly. It's like, that's her shtick. It's like, that's the one thing she's like, if I want anyone to know anything about me, I want them to look at me and see loyalty. Because even Marcelo said it later, is that she has, like, of anyone in the house, she has the most respect. And I think it's because she's kind of like, she's continuing to reinforce this. So they have no choice but to believe, oh, she's loyal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's her authenticity, too. I think that stands out in a game where everyone has a little bit. And I think it came out when she was giving the speeches, too, to the jury in this episode, The Twist. It's like, you know, it's like she speaks in such a way that you really do believe. And she's telling the truth a lot of the time, but not all the time, obviously, because it's Sequester. But you always kind of believe what she's saying, whereas a lot of other players who are playing great games, they still are, you know, they don't feel as authentic, right? You're like, you don't know, you know, if they're really. She just happened. She cuts through all that in a great way.
Yeah.
for her and for her game.
So, so that's, I thought that all of this was great so far. We then learn about the twist of the episode, and I'm definitely of at least two minds about this twist. There's one part of it that I did enjoy a lot, and then the rest of it, which I felt like was a bit of a flop. And so, the twist is that each player left in the game is going to give a pitch to the jury. They've got 3 minutes to make their pitch, and the pitch is for the jury to decide which two people will be up for elimination in this round and which one person will be safe in this round from both the vote and the drag. And so the idea behind this pitch, I think, is intriguing on its own, right? Having the players give a pitch to the jury, who can make the best pitch, who is the better speaker, who can make the most compelling case. And we get to see kind of a preview of what they might say in the final two, how they're viewing their own game. I love all of that part of it. I think the bad part about it, in particular with how this season is set up, is that one of the players in the game just came from the jury. And so as soon as you hear the twist, you kind of know where we're going in the episode, right?
Yeah. Right. And I want to say, you know, with this being my first season, I love the visual representation of what the twist is. I think it's awesome. It's so much better than having someone on the cast explaining what it is, like we see on like Big Brother all the time. You know, if they were even just to take this element and just, I love that they just explain it. You have the visual representation. And if I miss it, which I'm not going to lie, some of these twists I have missed it and I've had to rewind. I'm like, okay, let me grasp this before we get into it. But I love that. But yeah, I did think going into this, I'm like, okay, well, this is a shoe-in for like them trying to benefit Muna. Mm-hmm. I am rooting for Muna, so I wasn't that mad about it. But I can see in light of like fairness or, you know, unpredictability, you know, we wouldn't want it to be able to guess that.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is I agree with what you're saying, Jared, about it's cool to think about how they can find ways to get these players in front of the jury, not a back and forth dialogue, but just being able to speak to them earlier in the game. And I think beyond the fact that Muna was on the jury and came back, I just think no matter what you do, the jury is going to have a bias of some kind. I mean, we hear this in exit interviews all the time, like, oh, we all wanted this person to win. Oh, but then when they got voted out, we moved to this person and it goes down the line. So you have the final people. And I just think like, I don't know if you're ever going to wind up with the right makeup of a jury where the pitches matter enough to who's going to get the safety. I think that's the thing, that the pitches might matter down the road. I think especially for Natalie, this was huge. And we saw that with how Brent spoke about her and some other people, but it just feels like no matter what, even if there is no someone coming back from the jury, there's always going to be just someone who the jury is kind of going to rally around, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, because if you get people who are loyal people who, like, you know, aren't super strategy show heavy, they're just going to, you know, vote for the person they're loyal to. If you get people that are, you know, strategically into the game, they want to, you know, think about strategy and do the strategic thing. Those people are also going to be like, well, I'm having influence. I get to do what I want. I'm going to set this up in a way where I control the outcome. They're not going to let the other people in the game control them. It's going to be the other way around. So, like, it's really a lose-lose in terms of, like, trying to make the speeches matter.
Right. Yeah. And in terms of the speeches, I thought it was so interesting how, well, I guess the speeches and the people, saying who they wanted to like nominate, I thought it was so interesting how no one named Spencer and Natalie, and for very different reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't name Spencer because, okay, he's been there before, you know, we're ready to play the game, we're ready to shake things up. And then Natalie, they just see her as such a non-factor and not a threat, which I'm like, I really hope, you know, I feel like Natalie has impressed me in terms of her ability to stay this long and think strategically and be able to, you know, help, you know, with Jacob executing. But I really hope that she's able to articulate this if she does end up making it to the end, because I don't even see the jury being able to say like, oh, she, you know, she would deserve to win just because she's not out in the forefront.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was so fascinating. And we can talk about it, I guess, more when we get to that point of the episode. But just where she fully owned voting for Muna, I thought that was so interesting. And it, because it's like a lot of the time you feel like she'd want to keep that secret for a little bit. But like you're saying, it might be in her best interest to take any opportunity she can to get people talking about her as a big game player. Like she might, it might be too late to start at the final two.
Yeah. And so, again, that's one of the reasons why I really enjoyed this aspect of the twist, where we got to see a kind of a preview of, you know, the things Natalie might say to the jury. And I really feel like this is a great spot for her to be able to claim that Muna move in the previous week. You know, maybe she could have thrown in some more details about how exactly it went down. But I think in general, it kind of proves that what we're hearing from her in confessionals is what she can articulate to a jury. And getting started now is so key, so vital, I think, to her chances if she does make it to the end. And I thought she was at least one of the two most impressive, you know, speech givers in this whole thing, if not the best, in terms of being able to articulate a strategy, an overarching strategy of her game and where she wanted to go. I was very impressed. It seemed like Brent was impressed. We didn't really get any thoughts from the jury other than like the one throw off line from Brent. I wish we had heard a little bit more from the jury, although, you know, shows tend to shy away from that because it can be a little spoiler as to who like the jury. We know who the jury wants to win. So,
right. Well, who did you think speech was the worst?
The worst to me was probably Marcelo's.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. It was a little bit messy, and then the kicker where like at the end he was like, "Oh, and the people I'm pitching, Jacob and Spencer, or whatever it was." Like,
I feel like he sort of was, he had felt like he'd like internalized. Like, I feel like there are players like Natalie who are like, "Oh, the jury doesn't necessarily see all the things I'm doing and they might not respect my game." And it's like, if you feel that way, you have to go in with confidence and almost act as if, "What are you talking about? Like, I'm playing this amazing game. You just don't know." And I felt like Marcelo has played well to this point and kind of felt like he brought all the baggage of how he felt they would think about him into the speech. Like, he just felt worried from the beginning. Like, I know you guys don't think I'm playing well, but like, listen, right. And it's like, oh, I just, you know, it was too bad. But I think he had things he could have pointed to.
Mm-hmm. He's like, "I'm a mastermind." Believe me. Please.
Right.
Yeah, that's just like, it's not the place you want to, like, I think I've talked about this before, but you never want to be in the position of trying to claim something that other people don't already see. Because it's like trying to like swim out of quicksand or whatever. Like, the more you try, the more you sink in their estimation. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely part of the case here, I think, with Marcelo. It did not go over super well, it seemed.
And he went first, and like with his speech, he made me think they only had like 30 seconds. I was like, why is he, what is happening? I was like, this is not enough time. But then Muna went and was able to articulate things. She explained why she was picking who she picked. I was like, oh, Marcelo just butchered that.
To be fair, it was scary, all those people sitting there.
Yeah, with masks.
Like, that was genuinely unsettling.
That is the thing. I mean, typically when you're giving some kind of speech like he hasn't been able to see any kind of reaction from the jury, and none of them who, you know, giving these speeches, and as they're talking to the jury, it's completely stone faced. You have no idea how they're reacting, which can be a good thing in some cases, because you hear all the time about like final two, final three speeches where the person can tell that the jury is like having nothing to do with it, and it just like puts even more pressure and screws them up even more. But it's still, I mean, getting nothing is probably pretty close to getting negative feedback. And so right. It's a lot of pressure to be like, oh man, I hope people are liking it. So Marcelo goes, Natalie has a go. Muna and Billy have somewhat similar approaches, where they're going to pitch Jacob and Marcelo because they basically backstabbed them. And this, they did not really take the strategic approach. They took more of a like, come on, guys, like, come on, guy, we know what you want to do. and Billy in particular, really, and this is, look, this is the way to Brent's heart. She really, you know, played up to Brent's ego. Like, Brent, you really made an impact on me. And it really just, I really care about you. And yeah, it worked. So.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, I was like, appealing to Brent is the right way to go. And speaking of Brent, when they showed the jury, you know, they all have masks on. I was like, when I saw Brent, my initial, I guess I haven't really seen him with the mask on and dressed up, because my initial thought was like, who is that on the jury? And I was like, oh my gosh, Brent looks amazing. Like, he looked so good in his mask. I mean, he looks good without his mask too, but I was like, he looks great.
Brent, you look great in a mask, all right? That's what I'm going to say. So we get Jacob's pitch. Now, this was interesting to me. So, you know, Billy and Muno, you know, we got a sense of like where they're at right now. The one thing I didn't love about Billy's pitch here, though, was that she seemed to make a lot of it about her throne votes. And like, I wasn't exactly sure where it came from, because from our perspective, from my perspective, at the very least, watching the episodes, people have brought it up in the past, but it kind of was like, why are you defending yourself about throne votes right now? I feel like we haven't talked about that in a while. And it kind of feels like you're defining your own narrative to be, hey, my throne votes aren't really that bad. And it's like, well, maybe you should talk about other aspects of your game that are good, I think, is usually the strategy I would go with. But I think, again, overall, I think that it's probably, I think the strength of her relationships will probably carry regardless. And you know, I think that she did a good job of deflecting it onto this whole thing with Brent, where it was like, I did it because I care about you, Brent, not because of anything else. So Jacob comes in. Jacob does have a sort of strategic angle, or at least he tries to. But you can tell, or at least I can, Jacob is still shaken from the previous day. I mean, you could see it in all of his confessionals in the previous episode, which I'm sure were filmed the day before, but he has not fully recovered. I think Marcelo probably too was still shaken from the whole thing. And it was interesting because Jacob, to this point, has been kind of the guy sitting back, kind of like, you know, he's been cool, calm and collected. He's been in charge. And now, you know, the heat is up, has been turned up, and he is sizzling here. Right. And you can feel it in his energy.
Yeah, he came in there very like apologetic, it seemed, because he like off the bat, he was like, I came to do whatever I have to do to get to the end and like win this game. And so, you know, it seemed like, you know, hey, I'm justifying, like, I know what I've done may look bad, but that was my intention to come and do whatever I had to do, you know, no matter who it is. So it instead of, you know, just standing behind what he's done and explaining why, it seemed more like, please don't think it's that bad.
Yeah. I mean, it was, again, it was a defensive speech, kind of similar to what Billy did. I think a bit less effective than Billy's though, because he came off so nervous, right. Which like when I feel like when you're coming off defensive and nervous, it really just makes you feel like you don't even believe your own defense, right? Whereas with Billy, when you're like very confident about your defense, at least it's like, well, they really feel this. With Jacob, it's almost like, are you trying to convince yourself, bro? Like,
Jacob seemed really resigned this whole episode, you know, and not necessarily unfairly. I mean, he was in a tough spot, but it felt like the whole episode, even afterwards, he was like, look, I'm going in. Like, he tried to be tough, but it just felt like he was sort of at a certain point, just kind of getting mentally ready to battle.
Yep. I did like his reasoning, though, like the targets that he had. I like that he wanted Natalie in there because he knew that Natalie would not choose him for a battle if, you know, in the scenario that she would go. And I do think it kind of helped counteract. So in Natalie's pitch, she said, and again, I love how Natalie wove in her strategy with her pitch. It was a very like it was a very well thought out speech where she said, the reason I don't want Jacob to be a target is because I don't want him to go because he underestimates me. And I'm going to be able to turn that around on him at some point, which is great for her because it helps provide a narrative and a perspective where she has the upper hand on him. But when he comes in and says, I'd like Natalie to be in there because I know she's not going to drag me into a battle match, it helps undercut what she was trying to sell, which is that, like, oh, he thinks I'm valuable, but he's underestimating me. Whereas from his perspective, it's like, well, she's kind of expendable and I know that she's not going to throw me in. And so it kind of went back and forth there. And I feel like nobody really has the one up there in terms of the pitches that they gave regarding each other.
Yeah. And he didn't underestimate the power that like Muna and Billy have in the house because he knew that they were going to try to rally votes to get Natalie in. So he knew that they have enough, like, I guess, social capital in the house to be able to persuade people to vote Natalie and get the votes because, I mean, they only needed like three. And so, you know, I thought that was good because even though he has like betrayed both of them with what he did with the last round, he still understands like how powerful they are in the game.
Yeah, I think he knew going in there and pitching Muna and Billy would probably just have been the most obvious thing he could have done. And it just, I don't think it would have had much of an impact. You know, I think he gained something from at least going a little different from that.
Yeah.
He has to know that the jury doesn't want Muna and Billy.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's such a weird spot too, because he also has to know that like, no matter what he pitches, it's not going to go through anyway. So it's like, do you then just like kowtow to the jury and just give them the picks that they would want? But that makes you kind of look like you don't really have, like, you're going to do something that's not good for your game. In order to pander to the jury, like that just makes you look like not a strong player. Or he can like take a big shot that they're not gonna like, and they're not gonna pick him. And it's like it's kind of you know, lose.
Yeah.
Well, to try to count out what they wanted, he may have had to pitch himself. So that
right,
been,
yeah.
Like, you know what? Put me up there. You know what?
Put me as one of the people, but also choose me as one of the safe people. It's a great move. You'll have full control.
Oh my God.
You'll auto eliminate someone.
Right. That actually would have been incredible. Since he would have made himself one of the targets he pitched, but he would have won safety by that. Yeah. Would have been.
Right.
That would have been an insane, weird breaking of the twist.
Voice breaking twist.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So Spencer is going to have a go. Spencer has decided that he is actually going to go with Muna and Billy. The pitch that Muna made to him was successful in the previous episode. He sees himself as a big target, just like Muna. He wants to go against the, you know, the other big targets. I obviously think this is a misread on Spencer's part, but I will say, I do think it is his best play. You know, normally you'd be like, you know, Nicole, Enzo, stop it. Like, don't go to the end with people that will obviously beat you. But in Spencer's case, I really feel like Muna and Billy are so connected to all of the people that don't like him so much already that his best chance to win is to ride with Muna and Billy and then hope that they get eliminated and then he gets the goodwill of having not betrayed them. Right. Like that's I feel like that's genuinely his best play at this point.
Yeah, he's in an interesting spot in that, like, he was just so down and out for so long and voted out. And he's in a spot now where if somebody wants to work with him, like, I mean, I feel like he's just so excited to have someone working with him. But it'll be interesting to see because he has a great narrative, but he can't, I don't think he can beat Muna or Billy. So it's kind of like you're saying, he's in a really tough spot where the people that want to work with him are definitely people he can't beat. So it's just a tough situation because I don't think he has enough social capital. Like I don't know what we'll see, but if next week he goes, now it's time to get Moon and Billy out to everybody. I think Moon and Billy will just run right over him. You know what I mean? So he's got to be very careful with what he does.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was so funny at the beginning of speech when he was just like, oh, you know, every week every day when I see y'all sitting over there, like, I know it sucks. And I just think about how much it sucks. It's like, why are you rubbing that into the jury? They're not happy. They're in that position. Like, you don't have to point it out.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we get Josh's speech, which I definitely felt like was one of the best ones here, which wasn't super surprising. He was fully able to recognize his position in the game, articulate it well, and basically tell the narrative of his game, which was like, hey, got off to a rocky start, but I really I knew where the power structure in the house was going to go. I got in with those people. And like Josh has illustrated the true power structure and narrative of the season far more than anybody I've seen in the house. Even the people in the power structure didn't talk about them being the power structure as much as Josh has now talked about it. And the fact that he, you know, and sometimes like these things, these narratives can come in after the fact, but it really does seem like he knew what he was doing. He got in with the right people and he is now in a spot where both sides are trying to work with him. Both sides are trying to court him. He is liked by everyone. The only reason anybody would want him as one of the vulnerable people is because he wouldn't be voted out, because people know that he's safe. And he's able to describe all of this to the jury. He's also telling them that, hey, I know that I need Muna out of this game. It's not what they want to hear, but like, it's again, like, what is he supposed to say? Nah, I like Muna too, guys. I know that you'll vote for her, so I want to keep her in. Like it's a lose-lose situation. But I thought this was a great speech. I feel like if this is indicative of the kind of thing that he will say in the final two, if he gets there, I think he very well might have a chance, especially because I think he is still pretty well liked by the jury, as well as the people still in the house.
Yeah, he had such a great so much thought went into the two people that he nominated, you know, like him saying he wanted Muna and Billy. He was like, in my mind, I'm thinking that the jury is going to probably want to go with the people that Muna and Billy selected, which is probably Marcelo and Jacob. Then one of Muna and Billy are safe. And then Marcelo and Jacob or Jacob might pick one of Muna and Billy, therefore jeopardizing Muna and Billy by going with the choices they want. I was like, I'm so glad he put in so much thought into that. I mean, I thought it was great. I mean, I definitely wouldn't have wanted to see Muna or Billy as one of the nominees, but I did like seeing this level of gameplay from Josh. And I just think he's just continued to impress every week.
It was just a clever argument.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what the thing I've been most impressed with him and what I think bodes so well for him moving forward in the game is as less and less people are in the game, not just Final Two, but how Final Four is controlling the room, being able to speak in a really effective way and sort of like stand up for yourself and push the conversation away from you or onto somebody else is so important. And so when you watch Josh speak there and even later with Marcelo, you know, you see that he's someone who's going to be able to hold his own in these kinds of conversations that are going to come about if he's getting into the final four and the final two. So that's what's really interesting. That kind of ability to speak is so important.
Yeah. And I thought he did a great job. Nobody even mentioned it in any of the things. So I have no idea how it came off necessarily. Again, like he's pitching a very much a losing battle, trying to get like Muna and Billy in as the targets. But he came up with such a clever way of pitching it, which would have been the correct logic if the like, cause here's the jury sitting there watching Josh give this like very clever pitch. And they're like, aha, loser. We already gave Muna an LOS. So your logic is false. It's like, all right, well, I mean, it's a good effort though, right? I mean, it's not his fault.
Right. If anything, that would be a great. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say the real time the jury knows more about the game than one of the players. He's like, guys, this is what we're going to do. And the jury's like, he has no idea. He's so out of the loop.
Right. If it was like more, if the jury recognized how good of a game he was playing, then maybe they would see it as an opportunity to flush Muna's LOS. If they were to, you know, pick him as the one with the best speech, but no, there's stands.
Yeah. I feel like the only thing, like, maybe the only other pitch he could have made was, like, hey, if you put Muna and Billy up, for elimination, because you know that one of them is going to be vulnerable anyway, that will also signal to the rest of the players that maybe they won't be automatic wins. And then the survivor of that, will not have such a big target on them moving forward. The problem with that is that Josh is the one pitching it. Then all he has to do is say, I pitched that to the jury, and they're still obviously right. But it was just another thing that came into mind. So great speech from Josh, but what we're going to see is that the people on the jury are, of course, going to try to game this as much as they can. You see them talking about how, okay, well, if we keep Billy safe, Muna has an LOS. If Muna can't be voted for, which means she can only be chosen, which means she'll be able to use her LOS, which means we can guarantee both Billy and Muna's safety by saving Billy. So, therefore, we are going to do that. There's definitely a lot of frustration about this. The way that I see this, is that it reminds me a lot of Survivor, Edge of Extinction, right? The audience was not very happy with the jury's vote in Edge of Extinction. I was always somebody that said, look, I don't blame the jury. I don't blame the jury at all because it's not the jury's fault. If I was on that jury, I would be doing the same thing. Me, I would. I would be doing the same thing because, look, I'm choosing between one person that I spent a couple days with at the very least in this game, right? Bonding with, commiserating with, you know, like we're both out of the game. Like we're both just spending time talking to each other, hanging out versus the time you spent in the game where you have like 20 minute periods of game time and then you're isolated, right? There's like no time to bond or talk at all. And on top of that, like personal connection that you've built with the person in there, there's also genuine like game incentive when you're in the jury to be like, hey, let's just agree. We'll do everything we can to help each other out. We'll vote for whoever it is that makes it back in. We'll all vote for them. We'll all help them. You know, even if you have no connection, you have all the incentive in the world to make that kind of a deal. You don't necessarily need to hold it up, but you still made the deal and you still have the incentive of, well, if that was me, I would want me to fulfill my end of the deal because then I'd win. So I'll probably do it. Like, I don't blame the jury at all. In these situations, I blame the format. I blame the twist.
Yes.
It put them in a situation where they did something that is unpopular. But I think most people in that spot would do the same thing. And that's, it's a tough position to be in.
Yeah, and Muna may spend more times playing the game after she came back in sequester than Chris Underwood did in Edge of Extinction. I think she may actually.
We'll have to wait and see how many rounds, how many votes they actually survive. Right, that might be pretty comparable. I really do feel like that might be where we're heading. I mean, it really seems like Muna is in a very good spot. You know, from this episode, she goes into the final six with an LOS. Very unlikely that she will end up going home next round. Then she's in the final five. No more LOS, I believe. LOSs are gone at that point. But there's usually some kind of immunity at final five. So she has a chance at winning that. And even if she doesn't, she will probably still have Billy in the game. Maybe not, but maybe she will. And if she does, then she'll have 2 out of 5 votes for sure. And it's really looking like, you know, Muna has a very good chance of making it to the end. If she gets to the final four, especially with Billy, I find it very difficult to see how she goes out, unless, you know, she gets wheeled out or something along those lines. And then, of course, if she makes it to the end. So if that is the case, it does kind of feel like the Chris Underwood situation, but similar to that one, I would say, like, you know, again, you can't really blame the jury, you can't blame the player either, you can't blame Muna that, like, nope. I mean, she's doing as much as she can. Like, when she's immune, she's immune. If she's not immune and she makes it through a round, and she made it throughout, like, she's doing as much as she can. And it's not her fault that things are falling in her favor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And to be fair, exactly. I mean, the first round, she did have to battle her way back in. So it's that one round there, actually, you know, she was totally on the ropes against Brendan there. So that is, at least, you know, this round and the round before, she didn't really face any adversity because of the twist. But right there, I mean, you know, she definitely did earn her way back in there.
Yeah, it's so hard to fault the jury in this type of situation. Like you said, Taryn, it's definitely the format, it's definitely the twist, because you have to think in the minds of of the jury, because they're thinking, I wanted to be in that position. So if I were in that position, I would want them to vote for me too. So they see, like, if I were in those shoes, I wouldn't want someone to hold that against me to say, oh, I've been voted out already and I can't win. So they definitely have that going for them too. Cause I had to think so. I mean, I sat on that for so long after Chris Underwood, after that season happened, like, how could they vote for him? And I was like, you know what? They were just thinking, if I were in his shoes, you know, I would want the same thing to happen. So, you know, you can't fault them at all. It just how the cards fell. And like you said, Brendan, she won that last battle match fair and square.
It's very powerful. It's very powerful that effect that you're talking about, where it's, well, that would have been me. Like, you know, there's nothing that will bond you or make you empathize as much as, this is the person who is in the spot that, like, that could be me. And if I was there, this is what I would want to feel. And so you rationalize in your own brain, if I was there, this is what I would want the reasoning to be that I could win. And so you already have these pre-planned, like, reason thought out things of, like, justifying what you're doing. And on top of that, again, you have the emotional component of, like, you've hung out with this person outside of the context of a game, where, you know, you had no pressure on you and bonded with them and you've become friends with them and you want to see them succeed and all of that. So, you know, that's why you need to be very careful with returning players and how you handle it and the kinds of powers that they get and such like that.
Well, there's going to have to be a lot of urgency to get her out, because the other thing she's going to have is that there have been a lot of rounds. And so the problem is, she's going to have that, like, why didn't you get her out? Right. Like, whoever gets there with her is going to really have to fight that as well, where it's going to be like, you know, how did you let her get this far? It's almost like that. It's like that Mike Holloway thing too. She's just going to have that, like, well, you couldn't get her out. So, you know, so there has to be some real urgency next week and moving forward for everybody to get her out. I mean,
which is unfortunate. And, you know, like, to give some credit to the other players in the game as well, you know, a frequent, you know, argument that you'll see is like, hey, you know, it's fair. You know, if Muna is vulnerable at five, then they'll have had one opportunity to get her out and they would have needed to do it. But you have to kind of look at the other side of that, where it's like every other player in the game is forced to stop everything they're doing, get on the same page as everyone else, and deal with this one massive thing that, it's not going to be in everyone's best interest to stop what they're doing because they needed to do something else. And now they have two things that they can't do. And they're just choosing between two things that will make them lose. And now you're trying to convince the person that's choosing between two losing situations to do what you want to do to get Muna out. And they're like, whatever, I don't care anymore. And so it's a lot harder than you might think it is. And it puts a huge burden on the other players. That is very unbalanced, I would say. So here we are. Of course, the jury chooses Jacob and Marcelo to be vulnerable in this round. The main, piece of content we get here, a couple of things. We get that Marcelo is going to rat Natalie out immediately. Hey, Natalie was in on this, guys. And Muna is like, I never would have, we're from the same city. How could she? I thought we were good. That was an unbreakable bond.
That's right. It's so unspoken. It's only on Muna's end. Like, you've never heard Natalie say this.
Never
like
heard Natalie
allegiance.
Well, everybody think back in Minnesota. That's where they're from. Right? Minnesota. It's like, what? No, everybody, the whole city will be. It's going to be so mad.
Another great thing about this moment was how shocked Billy was. She was like, Natalie?
The one Natalie. That's done this to me like three times already? So to Brendan's point, they ask Natalie straight up. They're like, Natalie, did you do this? And she's like, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I can beat you in the end. So I just had to do what I had to do. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it was a fascinating moment too, because as I was watching the episode, when she said it, my initial response was like, oh, is she really going to say it? And then I started thinking about it. I thought, yeah, I think because it's a round where she's already immune, I mean, there's no world where she can, be voted out. And it's not like revealing that's going to get her dragged by Jacob or Marcelo. So I actually think it was smart at that point to, because as you saw, Muna and Billy, both of them in confessionals were like, all right, wow. And it did change their perception. So it'll be interesting to see. It doesn't seem like it's often the right move, but I think it might have been the right move there for her to kind of solidify that, and own that when she had the chance to the people, even in the game, not just the jury.
Yeah, because you heard Billy say like, okay, I was thinking Natalie can be a part of this four, and I'm not anymore. But it's because now she's seeing Natalie as a player, not just somebody to, bring along, and they're not, thinking about the game, they're not a threat. And the sole reason is because now she sees Natalie as playing a game. So that could help her, if things swing her way and she ends up having to justify that to a jury, she's starting to, change that perception of her gameplay.
Yeah, and the reality is, I mean, she can't really want to be in a four with Billy and Muna. As much as it might have cost her her chance, just because of it'll be best for Natalie's game to not be in that four with them. So even though it sounds like, oh man, she ruined that avenue, it's like she can't really take that avenue.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no other option here. I mean, Marcelo's already ratted you out. Trying to deny it is not going to work very well. You've already told the jury you want credit for this move. So perfect time to admit it, as you guys mentioned, that she's already immune. So, there's not going to be blowback in this round for it. And her biggest concern right now should be, I need more credit. I need more things on my resume for when I get to the final two, if I make it there. So I feel like it's definitely full on just like the right call. There seems to be like a little bit of a narrative here with Muna. I don't know if it was in response to Natalie or if it was in response to Jacob. But Muna talked about like, the people are playing like cowards, and that, like they're afraid of going against people in the end. Which I was like, well, Muna, like, it's easy for you to say, right? Like, it's not a concern for you.
Like, the perfect strategy for the person who is going to beat everyone to play. Like, right. We should take the best person to the end. Who's the person that is the toughest to beat? That's the person that you don't want to. That's the narrative she should push.
And of course, like the narrative goes, like if you're not the person that beats everyone in the end, the narrative is everyone's cowards because they're just taking their friends that are going to beat them to the end. Play the game. Take out the Codys.
There seemed to be a weird thing here, though, with like Spencer and some people where the narrative wasn't, we really need to play the game by keeping all these, you know, it's like yeah. not shaking up the power structure. Right. It was like both things. It was like.
And I mean, and that was the thing, too. I think I said this on the stream. I was like, please say that all you want to the other players. Don't say it in a confessional. Don't say it to us. Right. Like, come on. Because it's a very effective. I mean, that's how people win the game to perpetuate those kinds of narratives. That's why Wu took Tony. That's why, you know, like Nicole and Enzo would have taken Cody. Like, you know, it's how people win the game by constructing these narratives that benefit them. And the honorable thing to do, the moral thing to do, whatever it is the thing that, just so happens to benefit me.
Right.
Oh, what a coincidence, man. Terrible people don't do that. You're a coward if you don't do that. And so like, it's a very effective strategy, but don't sell it to the audience.
Well, it's interesting when that happens, because it felt like Jacob was being, he just made this big move to try to take out Muna. And then everyone's like, well, there's a guy who's not playing the game like Jacob.
Right?
You know? Like,
right.
Like, what? It's like Jacob's playing scared. It's like, dude, he's like literally on the ropes because he played so aggressively.
And I mean, that's, right. that I would just label like, that's good game. Like Muna clearly behind that narrative, and that's great. But I would prefer it if it was a false narrative. From Muna, not just what she actually right. believed. So we get that from Natalie. We are then going to see that with Marcelo kind of ratting out the plan from the previous round, that Jacob is going to get upset with Marcelo. I mean, this is a very similar situation from my perspective, where Jacob was like, Marcelo! How could you rat us out? We were supposed to not rat each other out. Which is like, well, Jacob, if you feel like you have the votes, like it's in your interest to not go any further. I don't know if he felt like he had the votes, though, because, you know, ultimately he didn't. Jacob certainly feels like, and like, man, this whole episode was full of people in confessionals trying to sell me, nonsense. Where like Jacob is like, Marcelo, you sold me out. And Marcelo is like, I didn't sell him out. I just told the truth about what happened. That's what it means, Marcella. That's what it means.
Yeah, I was like, Marcella clearly doesn't understand the definition of what selling someone out is. Yeah. Literally textbook selling him out.
So this gets very heated. This one was a little weird. It was a little bit hard to follow, like where it went. Like I got the initial argument, and then they just kept going, and I kind of lost. I lost where they. I don't even know where they ended up, to be honest.
Yeah, it was so surreal when they're the two that are on the block and they're in a room alone fighting with each other. I mean, to me, that was like, I thought that was so fascinating, and that, you know, they're in this situation where they're supposed to, you know, against one another, and they're competing. Like, you know, normally you'd think they'd be just running around to every room trying to, you know, curry favor. And it was just really funny to see both of them in a room alone, door shut, like, okay, you need to hash this out. It's like, no, you guys need to be trying to get each other worked out.
Especially when Spencer was in the room and they're like, can we have the room? And Spencer's like, they both need my vote. Why are they kicking me out?
Yeah, Spencer's just there sort of awkwardly, like,
yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, the line that stood out to me when Marcelo was in the argument with Jacob was Marcelo mentioned that, like, hey, you know, you've been playing me the whole time, like something along those lines of like this didn't just happen. You were probably lying to me the whole time. And this kind of, you know, brought me back to the episode where Jacob was voted out and Marcelo kind of didn't really tell Jacob ahead of time, even though he knew and didn't really he kind of threw his vote that round. And it kind of like gave like, okay, I feel like this is what I was missing. Cause all season long, I've been like, what is the Marcelo Jacob relationship? And I feel like it was, you know, Jacob working tightly with Marcelo, feeling like Marcelo is on board, being like, hey, let's stay separate. And Marcelo kind of being like, is he playing me? and maybe not being quite as on board as Jacob, because rightfully so, he was a little worried that Jacob was the Cody of the season, probably, right? And so there was always this kind of underlying tension, between the two of them, and it really just exploded in this moment. I did talk to Marcelo earlier today, and I asked him about his relationship with Jacob, and he did mention that, like, in that round when Jacob was voted out, he was like, yeah, I mean, I knew it was going to happen. I wasn't going to, like, I didn't feel like there was much I could do, and I didn't want to stick my neck out for him. So, which was like a slightly different sort of take on it than I kind of had assumed for a while based on the first episode. For me, I felt like, I feel like I've solved this case. We're good. We got it.
Yeah, these two are like friends that, you know, you have that one friend that is always talking about other people. And then you start to think, well, if they're talking about other people, maybe they're talking about me too, because Marcelo knew, like, Jacob was like spread across this game and he has a great relationship with everyone and everyone kind of thinks they're working with him. And so then he's like, am I just one of the ones he's playing as well? So I think that's kind of where Marcelo's insecurity with their relationship came from.
Mm-hmm. So that relationship is going to break down. There's really not a lot of options for who Jacob is going to choose when he gets voted out. It's pretty obvious that Jacob's going to be the choice here. You know, we hear from Josh that that's where he wants to go. He wants to get rid of Jacob because that will help pull Natalie in closer to him. And he, you know, he has a pretty an okay relationship with Marcelo at this point, and we know that Billy and Muno want to go that direction as well. So with those three votes, in addition to Marcelo's own, it's going to be a 4-3 vote. Spencer does side with Jacob, as does Natalie. That could be interesting moving forward, but it does seem like Spencer is firmly enough on the Muna Billy side at this point that it probably won't end up mattering a whole lot. And so ultimately what we see here is Jacob is voted out 4-3. And this is when I felt like he made a mistake in the previous episode when he didn't choose Billy for the battle match. And that really came back to bite him in this episode. And then again, he is going to avoid choosing Muna or Billy. I think he is still trying to sell the line of, hey, like, and you know, you can't blame him too much because he's genuinely friends with Muna and he probably genuinely wants to make amends. But I think he still feels like he can make amends and he can get back in there. The problem is that, like, even if he did get back in there, you're still going to lose to Muna. You still have to get her out. So it's like, you might as well. But he clearly feels as though the jury would have obviously chosen to save Muna, and it's useless. It's just going to piss her off even more if I try to choose her. So I might as well not even try. And if I pick Billy, she'll probably use the LOS on Billy or something like that, and it'll just piss them off even more. But you got to burn the LOS. You just have to.
Yes, I literally was about to say that. Like, why he knows this valuable information, why is he not trying to flush it? Like, he doesn't know if he's ever going to get an opportunity to flush it out like that again. Like, the time is winding down, and he had the opportunity right there, but didn't take it.
Yeah. It was a really, you know, missed opportunity in that way. And it's interesting. I'm not so sure that Marcelo was also the right choice to drag for him. It's like, I'm of two minds about it. I mean, I think it's interesting. I think if his logic was Marcelo might be the easiest person to beat, I think that actually might be smart.
I think
Marcelo did seem the most nervous.
Yeah.
He didn't say that, but that's felt that way. But I'm not sure that that was the best. I feel like someone like Josh may have been the best person for him to drag strategically.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe not for literally to win the match. Right?
Knowing what we know, that it was impossible for him to drag either Billy or Muna, Josh is obviously the next best choice. I mean, Josh was the other vote against him. And you know, Josh is, yeah. And Josh is the next biggest, you know, threat in the game, to his game. He's got Spencer. He's got, Natalie. He just got into a fight with Marcelo, but like, at least you've got something there, right?
Now,
at the same time, I will say that was my perspective watching the episode. Having talked to Marcelo, maybe this is wrong. Maybe Josh would have been more likely to go after Muna and Billy than Marcelo, because Marcelo told me, as a quick little tease for his interview, that had he stayed in the game, that he really wanted to go to the end with Billy and Muna. So so that might not have worked out very well for Jacob.
All right, then.
But yes, in addition to that, I do feel like Marcelo, you know, and Josh talked about this too, where, you know, he was like, Marcelo's going to crumble in that thing. Marcelo told me that he did not sleep that whole night because of what happened the previous day, and that he was just like out of his mind. And you know, if that was showing, then you know, it certainly paid off in the battle match. Mm-hmm. So Jacob is going to choose Marcelo. We get to the battle match. I did like this battle match in terms of like the visuals. I feel like I was able to follow it. Like I knew, even though it was a blowout, it still felt more tense to me and more exciting to watch because I knew the end game. Like when it was one ball left and one pillar, I was like, this is it. This is the end. I know. Like the worst for me is when I'm like, was that it? Is it over?
Right.
Yeah, this one was really easy to follow, and I appreciated that. But did it go on a little longer? I think it's because we saw every
minute needed to be. Yeah,
it was a little long. Yeah, we saw every minute of it, which is, I mean, we had the time, I guess, in the episode to do so. But yeah, it was such a blowout.
Yeah, there was always a period where how long it was going on. I almost wondered if we were going to get a comeback or something with how much time they were taking to keep cutting. You know, it's like that's such a thing that we see all the time in these shows, but they keep cutting back to the person too much.
Well, yeah, it's like, like normally,
you know, wait a second.
Yeah, normally it would never be that long unless there was a reason. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, but you know what's interesting about this is that even though it was a blowout, I think it was a great battle match because you could have seen a scenario where if someone just gets a little nervous and they keep like fumbling with their feet, or they get really like lose the distance of the ball. I mean, there was room for this to actually have that kind of exciting comeback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, even though Marcelo does, you know, 1300 jumping jacks and or jump ropes.
Yeah. I guess that's what everybody does at night when they can't sleep. That's like
he's just too unfit. He's got too many flip flops on, and it's just not going to work out.
That's right.
That must be the one thing that the sequester production provides them. Like everyone gets a jump rope. Do with it. Do what you want with it. But you see,
I'm glad I didn't wear flip flops in that battle match. That would have been legitimately dangerous. But that's in your
mind.
That would have been legitimately very scary.
So obviously we have to talk as well about Marcelo's speech at the end. He's again going to talk about how proud he is of everyone in the game, except for Josh. Screw you, Josh.
I was like, where did that come from? What was the point of that?
And Josh is like, what? What did I do, dude? Screw you. You know what? I hope Jacob beats you tonight. He's like, that's not right. It's light out. His sun is up.
I was like, maybe it was just because, you know, if he came back, he wanted people to think like he had one target coming back. But then I was like, no, this is Marcelo. He's just freaking out. And that's how he's feeling in that moment.
It reminds me a lot of Steve and Becky in Big Brother 17. Yeah. The random just like, what?
It's like, where did that come from? Why do y'all hate each other?
It is like Josh is the reason.
Josh went 0-60 too. That's
yeah.
Josh let him write that. Like he wasn't like, whoa. He was like, yeah, we get what.
Josh is just like ready to go at all time. I like Josh. he has this energy about him that he is always at 60. Like that's his secret. He's always angry, right? Like he's just always Hulk. He's just like, so he gets to stay calm throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, he embodies the saying, stay ready so you never have to get ready. That's Josh.
Constantly. Saw that in date night, you know, we saw that in date night, with him just cutting to the chase, right? I mean, he's always right there.
So that was hilarious. But there it is. Jacob is going to win the battle match. He will be coming back into the game, which I'm very happy for. I mean, the thing I was most excited about in this episode was like, all right, Jacob versus Muna. Here we go. Josh is probably going to be in the middle. Like, it's going to be a close vote. Oh, this is this is a foregone conclusion. But Jacob survives, and that means that hopefully we will get to see Jacob versus, except she'll have an LOS and he might have a power. So we might have to postpone that again to the final five, but then we might get to see Jacob versus Moon, except she'll win like an immunity and then it'll.
I never would have imagined this season was going to turn out, you know, being Muna versus Jacob, but right? That's definitely what this second half is.
Yeah. I'm interested, you know, looking forward to next week. I'm so interested in terms of Muna having the LOS, because it's not quite like an idol on Survivor, these things, because you have to play it. You could either play it like before you know if the votes are on you or to save from a drag, right? So there is that, like, just like they got her on date night. There is, if people play smart, there is this window to get her before the vote, because I think it's really smart if you're Muna, as long as you don't see it coming, to keep it, because then once you make it past the vote, then you really are completely immune in the final five. So it'll be interesting to see what Jacob does, because if he can find a way to make her feel like it's him, he might be able to. There's a window there. Like, I hope that the players don't kind of see it that way as well. I'm sure they won't, because they know the game, but there's a danger in thinking like, well, Muna's got an LOS at six, so that's it. You know, there is a window.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It is one of those situations, it's sort of similar to what I talked about before. Like, it's just like the level of difficulty is that much higher. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, if you're not on the same page with everyone else and you try to pull off something like that, it might have been the better play to just go with a simpler plan that was easier. And now instead, because you shot for the moon and you tried to get Muna. Yeah. Wow, that could have worked out. I shot for the Muna, and you missed. And now you're the one getting voted out instead of, you know, whoever else you could have gotten, because, you know, that was the play that was a much, much easier one to pull off, right? So it really does de-incentivize the move. But there is a possibility, right? So how the LOS works is it will be the last opportunity to play an LOS at the final six. But you do have to choose when you play it, as Brendan mentioned. So Muna can choose to play it like an idol in Survivor before the votes are read. And if the votes fall on her, then she will still be safe. And the person with the second most votes will end up going instead. Then if she's safe from the vote and it falls on the second most voted for person, she no longer has an LOS. That person, if this is how the round works, can choose to drag Muna if they want, and she will be vulnerable. So she can play the LOS and still be dragged into the battle match if it plays out that way. So it probably won't. And the reason I think it probably won't is because if the votes do fall on Muna and she uses the LOS, the person with the second most votes isn't necessarily going to drag Muna into the battle match. You know, it could be that it's a coordinated effort, and it's like, you know, if the other four people put three votes on Muna and one on, or two votes on Muna, two on Billy, they can kind of split their votes potentially if they want, and then it could be a tie and they could put the votes on Billy. Billy's not going to drag Muna, but they probably won't do that because it seems like Spencer's on board, so it'd probably be 3-3. And so it's, you really got to like look at the votes. Who's the most likely to be second most voted for person? Do you think that person is going to drag me? If you don't think they will, just play it, because why not? If you do think they might, then you might have to take the gamble and not play the LOS, so that the person who gets the most votes, if they try to drag you, you can say, nope, I have an LOS. Yeah. And you don't have to play the LOS before they choose who to drag, I believe, because it hasn't happened yet. But
right, yeah.
All season long, if anyone had ever decided to say, Josh, I'm going to drag you, Josh, I believe, would have been able to say, nope, I've got an LOS, so I'm going to use that now, and you're going to have to choose someone else. So I believe that's how it works there. That's how it has worked in previous seasons. So there are two places where you have to choose where to play it. But again, just having it makes it that much more difficult, because especially at six, if you put the majority of votes on somebody that has an LOS, you don't really get to choose who's the second most voted for person is. And so you're taking a huge gamble. And so you probably aren't going to do that, which means she probably can save it for the drag. And so she probably should be safe here at the final six. Another interesting thing could be, again, with Jacob going into Luxury Row, he could end up with his battle pass again. And he could potentially use that to throw either Billy or Muna in, but he's shown a reluctance to do so thus far.
You're right.
And he may also be the person that gets voted out himself. So it wouldn't be very effective if that's the case.
Yeah.
Right. And I guess speaking on votes, has there ever been a situation where someone hasn't revealed votes? Like what happened with Jacob?
Well, they introduced this rule in this season where you pick three people. I think in previous seasons, you either like everybody that voted for the person that voted out got voted out, like raises their hand or something like that. So in this one, it's like choose three people and you reveal their vote. Jacob deciding not to is the first time it's happened this season. But I mean, you know, you might as well reveal the votes, but he did know where they were. Right. So.
I feel like there's also kind of a move of, I think he was at that point wanting to maybe, because he can still get back into the game, and he wanted to, I think, project strength to the jury. Like, I think there was kind of a strong moment of like, I know what's going on. Yeah, I'm out, but I know what's going on. I wonder if that was part of what he was getting at.
Yeah. Especially like, the jury just hearing, I voted for you, Jacob. You know, it's like you're just reminding them that people voted him out, right? Right. If he doesn't reveal the votes and he just does the battle match and it's like, who got voted out, Marcel or Jacob? I can't remember.
Yeah, no, it's going to be.
I didn't hear any of the votes.
Yeah, out of sight, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. So, I mean, that's about what I had for the episode. It was very front heavy. There wasn't a whole lot to do with the vote or anything like that, but, anything else that, that you had to talk about, Brennan?
No, I mean, just that I've really, really been enjoying the show, and that I think what's great about the show, as it's been said a million times, but we really see it today, is that we have a lot of faith in these people to play the game. You know, obviously we see Moon and Billy, they're playing great games on their own and they're working together, but it's exciting to feel like players like Natalie and Josh and everyone really left in the game. You have a lot of faith in them that they're going to do something. And I think that's pretty exciting. And so that's why I'm excited for next week. Like you said, with Jacob versus Moon happening, and just, you know, Josh isn't going to do that. You know, Natalie isn't going to do that. And so it'll be interesting. They might not be able to do anything about it, but you know, they're going to try, and it's exciting.
Yeah. Any final thoughts, Asia?
Yeah, so the one thing that one of the confrontations in the episode was Billy versus Marcelo. So we didn't touch on that, but the way that Billy pulled Marcelo into the room, it was very much so a power move. Like, hey, I know, you know, what power I have, and I'm explaining, I'm going to make you feel bad for what you did, but I want you to know I'm not voting for you. So it was that was just a typical Billy move. I thought that was entertaining.
It was like an interesting dynamic, because, like, you know, coming from the drama of the previous round, you know, again, you expected sort of like Muna versus Jacob, and you kind of expected them to be on equal footing. But instead, it was like Muna and Billy are like lock safe, and and Jacob and Marcelo are like, you know, basically about to battle each other. And so the power differential was just like massive, and it wasn't even an argument anymore. It was just so you screwed up, didn't you?
Right. Yeah, it's one other thing that'll be interesting is it seemed like this episode there was a narrative of that, like, if you hadn't battled yet, you hadn't like proved yourself. And I mean, Billy has been playing, I think, a great game, and that it's a testament to how well she's played that she hasn't been pulled into one. But is that something she needs to worry about? I mean, maybe she's likable enough, it doesn't matter, but it was something that emerged this week, right? I mean, this sort of idea of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I don't think it'll matter for Billy.
No, me neither. It was just an interesting, yeah. It was just an interesting thing to see come up, because it was like, man, does that, probably not for Billy, but it's something that did come up. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to think about.
Yeah. Well, that's, I believe, what we have for you for episode 7 of Sequester season 4. I was very pumped about the last episode. This one, not quite as much, but you know, that's how Sequester goes sometimes. It gives and it yeah. takes away at times.
Yeah.
So
sometimes it's day, sometimes it's night.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes the sun is up and it's night. Sometimes it's down
and there's a moona.
Yeah. but we will be back next week to talk about next. Hopefully next week is another great one. It could be. I mean, we've got a somewhat interesting setup here. So hopefully we get something interesting. But we'll be back next week. You can of course find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. I will be streaming during the episode to give live reactions. It's a fun time. We also play some Among Us prior to that. So you can check out the stream there. You can also find me on Twitter @ArmstrongTaryn. Brendan, where can people find you?
You can find me at Brendan KJ Meyer on Twitter and Instagram.
All right. Asia, how about you?
You can find me on Twitter @AsiaLikeAsia. So that's AYSHA like ASIA. And if you haven't gotten a chance and you are interested in a show that is a little different, then you can definitely go to my Twitter and see the link to check out the Married at First Sight podcast. Rob and I got together to talk about the premiere. So definitely go check that out.
All right. I do have an interview with Marcelo here that I will play on video, and it will be on the audio as well. So make sure you stay tuned after I say see you later. thank you all so much for joining us tonight, and I will see you next time. And here's the interview right here. Here it goes.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Sequester Exit interview. I am your host, Taryn Armstrong, and here today with you, I have Marcella. How you doing, Marcella?
Yes, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Doing well. This was an episode last night.
Jeez, it was an episode, yes.
How are you feeling about it?
Well, I have to accept it because it happened, but it's all game, and I don't take anything personally, but it was just intense, very intense. Like, that whole round in itself was intense. Like, I think there's a lot of people don't really understand that the sequester side of sequester is, for me, was super hard. Like, just to like already dive right into it, pretty much the last two episodes that I was in, I was like literally like done. Like, I was a wreck. Like, I'm not trying to make excuses, but I was just like not really mentally there because of pretty much Muna's speech. As you saw, like when we voted her out on date night and she gave that speech, I was just standing there like, yes, the plan was like, maybe I can just convince like maybe like able to act that. I didn't know what was happening, but she was so hurt that it hurt a lot to see that. And that night, I literally like did not sleep. I was just thinking about that speech the whole night. Like, and again, I'm not making excuses because, again, my game was not that good for the last two episodes, but it was just hard to see that. And like, I was trying to put the pieces together, like trying to figure out who did this. Like, because like from the very beginning, I had like a four plan with me, her, Billy, and Jacob. Like from day one, it wasn't shown at all. But like, that was like my first alliance that I wanted to ride this game out with. And like, this whole game, I was just trying to figure out like who was going against like Muna. Like, why doesn't Muna want to work with us? I kept trying to think, like, first I thought it was Brendan, because that's why I got really mad at him at date night, because I thought Brendan convinced her that, you know, I don't know, something in my head was thinking it was Brendan. But I never thought that it was Jacob that did not want to work with her at all. Like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going off on a tangent, but...
Well, so, I mean, something that I was interested about was, you know, in the first episode, it really seemed to set up that you and Jacob were very, very tight, and that he was going to be more loyal to you than to Muna. But it felt like we never really got a check-in throughout most of the season about, like, where that stood. The thing I was especially confused about was in the episode where Jacob is voted out because he's tethered to Spencer. It seemed like you were aware that he was going to be voted out, but didn't give him a heads up. Like, you maybe weren't on the same page. Can you sort of explain like what this relationship was?
With Jacob?
Yeah.
Honestly, from the get go, we were planning on just working two different sides of the house. Like, we were just not going to talk at all throughout the rounds. And like, literally, like, I would be talking to one half of the house and he'll talk to the other. But specifically that round, it wasn't shown again, but there was a time where pretty much Brendan was my final two as well. Me and Brendan were super close in the house, and it was to the point where he was going to go or Jacob, like, it was between Brendan and Jacob. And Jacob came to me, he told me straight up, like, Marcelo, I think I'm gonna go this round. And I was just like, honestly, I didn't really try to help him that much that round. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm gonna try, but like, the house was so set on getting Spencer out that it was just like a done deal. It's the same with Brent. Like, if you're tethered to Spencer at that point of the game, like, you're gonna be out. Like, everyone wanted Spencer out. So like, I there was nothing I can do to save him that round, so I couldn't just like stick my neck out for him. But all I did was like, yeah, I couldn't vote for him. I was not going to vote for Brendan either. So that's why I went to Billy and I just said, hey, I'm going to just use my vote on you, because like, it's going to be pretty much like a escape for me. Like, I don't have to like risk anything. I'm just going to throw it on her. And if she goes, she goes. And if she like asks to like call out my vote, it's going to be like, well, I did it because you did it last round. But like, Jacob, there's no way that I could have saved him that round. Like, there was no way. And I was not going to stick my neck out for him, to be honest. It was just like, okay, if you go, you go. But it'll suck. But what can I do? Like,
yeah. Well, so, I mean, this sort of seems to lead into in last night's episode, you and Jacob essentially on the block together. And it seemed like there was some conflict that came from that. Can you sort of explain where this came from and what happened?
Okay. So pretty much like, again, the night before, I was just thinking like that four that I made, I really wanted to go far with them. And like, I was just like thinking, damn, like, I honestly feel like Jacob was playing me this whole game. At that point, I kind of realized, like, when I saw it back too, like, me and him having our date, like, I should have pushed Brendan, like, more. You know, I just was like, I was disappointed that he actually said Muna. Like, I went, like, I was very disappointed. Like, I didn't express it enough, but... So I thought about it the next round. I'm like, damn, like, I knew at that point I had to like step up my game. Like, I knew what I was doing. Like, I wasn't like completely floating. I was aware of what was happening. Like, I knew that I knew where everything was going to go down every round. Like, but at that point, like, when it was between us, like, when everyone started fighting, like, at that point, I thought maybe Jacob would think, okay, let's just not fight back. Let's just take the L. Like, they're mad, they're upset, which is why I was just trying to calm Muna and Billy down. Like, hey, like, you know, we made a mistake. Like, that was the worst move for me, is voting for Muna. But like, right there, we had the majority right there, like 4-3. And when I was trying to calm them down and Billy started getting hyped and getting mad, like rightfully so, because I was probably like, I was like pretty much called out. But at that point, Jacob should have just like not reacted, not overreacted, and just stay calm and like maybe talk inside the house. But then he started yelling and stuff. And I'm just like, okay, like Jacob is not thinking about my game. Like the whole, he's not, like, I was selfishly thinking that. I'm like, okay, he's not thinking about my game. He's not thinking about his own game, because like this could potentially end us. And I was just like, okay, I'm going to have to go against him. Like, this is it. Like, I have to go against him this round. And that's why, like, when that round, there was the speech to the jury and stuff, I knew for sure, like, okay, there's no way I can turn this around. Like, I'm going to go up regardless, because there's no way. Like, the whole jury loved Billy and Muna. And that's why I should have maybe explained more why I chose Jacob and Josh to go up, because I just wanted to prove to the jury that, hey, I'm going to go against Jacob, because I probably sure, like, I think that everyone knew that he was my close friend in the house. And then Josh was like, no one would vote Josh out because everyone really liked him. So I was literally just setting Jacob up to get out. So I was already planning on going against him that round. And when I played this game, like, I noticed every time I reach like 7 or 6, like, I literally just fucking lose it. Like, I was not okay mentally that whole round. Like, not, no excuses again, but I should have remained more calm and not, like, I was just like fucking over it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, I just knew that that was the round that I had to go against Jacob. And when I found out me and him were up together, like, I'm not, what did he want me to do? Literally just be like, okay, I'm safe, so I'm not gonna talk to anybody. Like, no, I'm gonna try to fight to stay in the house. Like, I'm not gonna just, no, I had to go against him fully. And that's what I did. I just literally just kept repeating that it was his plan. It was his plan to get Muna out.
If you had been voted out, who would you have dragged into the battle match?
I definitely would have dragged like Josh or Spencer. I really love Natalie. Like, the thing is with like Sequester, like every round is like a new world type of thing. Like, every round is going to be different. Like, the person that looked at it, like Spencer and Muna, they're against each other the whole, like, for the first 4 rounds. And then like Spencer completely turned the whole game around and got Muna on his side. So like, you can't be like, okay, I'm going to get this person out because I'm really mad at this person, and that's why I want him out. Like, you have to think long term. Like, like Jacob getting me out, like choosing me to go in the battle match when I really was loyal to him the whole game, like, it made no sense. He had nobody in the house. Like, easily the next round he could sit down with me and talk to me and be like, hey, squash it. So like, for me, I was going to choose Josh or Spencer just to like prove a point, like, I'm here to play the game, and like, I have to like make a move and build a resume like that everyone sees. And like, the next round I was thinking like, maybe a sport can just squash it and like talk it out again and like move on with the game.
Would you have gone to the to 4 with Billy and Muna, knowing how much the jury loved them?
I honestly, I'm insane. Yes, I would have, because the thing is, like, I would be like, I want to go with against the top of the top, like the best of the best. Like, they were the best of the best of the house. Like, even though if I would lose, I know, like, yeah, like the strategic, like, yeah, I should go against someone else. But like, at that time in my head, I'm like, I want to go to the end with them. And if I were to, like, I would like talk my ass out of it, like talk my ass on winning it. Like, I would just talk a lot to win. I don't know if that explained that right. But like, I would have tried to convince the jury to vote for me to win. But like, if they were to win over me, like, I would be okay with it, because like, this was like my plan from the very beginning. Like, it wasn't shown a lot, but like, I wanted them to go far, and like, we made it to the end. And like, if one of them won, I'll be fine. I'll be okay with it, because they were the best.
Is anything else that you want to get across here before we start to wrap up?
Wrap it up. No. Honestly, the game was the game. You saw what you saw. Like, I am very annoying. I talk a lot less. I'm like, that's just me. Like,
are you, when you watched it back, were you, see, my theory is that we saw a scene with you and Billy where you were showing off your feet. And so I thought, oh, he's wearing flip flops because he's proud of his feet. Not, but Muna was like, oh no, he's so overconfident, he's wearing flip-flops. Is my theory correct?
Yeah. Yes. I wore them to prove a point to the house that I was like super safe. And I was like, again, it didn't show a lot, but I was walking around the whole house and like trying to tell people like, hey, look at my feet, look at my feet. Like, and no one really noticed it. I'm like, okay, so everyone really thinks I'm safe. That's the thing. Like with me, it's like my, every round I had a plan. I just like can't, I have to learn how to actually like be confident enough in myself to explain things in my game. But like, every round I literally like they gave us a piece of paper to write down like everything that happened in the rounds and like what I literally had like an analysis on every person every round, and I was like pretty accurate, like, and yeah, maybe in confessionals and stuff I kind of panicked and stuff, but like when if you were to just show like my whole game, like I can literally explain everything that I've done every round, and it's just a shame that I can't do that. Like I can't prove it, like it's not there, and it's fine because the story is the story and I get it. Like it's like, come on, Jacob, Josh, Muna, Spencer, they are all playing like beautiful games and they have beautiful stories. And like, I understand, but I can't sit here and like explain everything I did because it's not there to prove it. Like I can be talking out of my ass. Like how would people know that I'm actually telling the truth? So it's like, what can I do? Like I have fun. I know what I did in the game, and like, people, a lot of people don't see it, but there's people that actually saw it and they messaged me and they're like, hey, we see what you did. And they understood. But like that, like the flip pop thing, like that was a strategy. Like I wanted to see like I'm safe in this house. Like I'm wearing flip flops and no one even recognizes it. Like I wasn't doing that just to be like cute. Like I was just like trying to prove a point. Like, so,
you didn't wear flip flops to the your actual battle match though, right?
No, actual battle match. I knew I was gonna go up. I put my Yeezys on. My Yeezys. And like the thing is, like, oh yeah, in that battle match, like I knew for sure like the chances of me winning, very low. Like, first of all, I was hungry as hell. Like I was not, like, we didn't eat breakfast that day. I was, and like we didn't, there's like there's food, but like there's not that much. Like I eat like rice, beans, and steak every fucking day. Like I was hungry. I was tired. I didn't sleep. It was a moon. Like, I'm not making excuses again, cause like I was like also weak and I flopped in that challenge, but like I knew the chances of me winning were like very low. So like, I might as well have fun with it. I tried my best in it, but I knew that day I was like, I'm going to like have to step up, and I worked my easiest. And
I mean, if only it had been a jumping jack challenge, I feel like
I was meaning jump ropes, but like I literally, like, that's the thing. I'm not trying to be funny or anything. I was actually being serious. Like I did like 1500 jump ropes every day. I was like, maybe I could win it. But like I was looking at that, like Jacob, athletic, the shoulders, tall. Like I was like, let me see if the chance of me, there's no way I'm gonna win. So like and that's the thing too. Like, I just laugh at myself. That's like my way of coping. Like, what am I to do? Like, cry about it? No. Like, I cried after for sure. But yeah, I just like don't want to take myself. I'm so tired of like beating myself up. Like, just I laughed it out. Like, I when I lost, I, you know, fell. I'm like, yeah, like fuck, I tried. I was gassed out. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's only one winner, you know. Like, it's not going to be there for everyone. It's you gotta be able to laugh at yourself, especially these games are so silly and they're so luck based. Like, you know, you gotta be able to, like, all right, you gotta take it with the stride, with a bit of a stride.
I understand.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not like disrespecting like everyone. Like, everyone really took it serious. I took this game very seriously as well. But like, it just gets to the point. I knew that my chances of winning was very low, and like, I didn't give up, like, to the very end. Like, even me calling Josh out, I was like, in my mind, my strategy was like, if I were to come back, like I was going to go after Josh, but like, I couldn't, I was just like, I laughed. I was like, I was still fighting to the very end. Like, and it didn't really show, but I was like, I was literally, that was me fighting, but I was just like, damn, I reached my point.
All right. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me here. The seasons had some ups and downs, but I don't think anybody can say that you did not go on there and give it your all different people have different strategies. I do respect the strategy of avoiding those battle matches, and you did that really well for a long time. So you know, there's definitely some things to be proud of there. So
there's some things not to be proud of, but
it's always going to happen.
That it's always going to happen. And like, yeah, I have fun. And, you know, whoever wins this season really kicks ass.
There you go.
Because, like, this was very hard.
All right. Well, that's what we have for you guys. Thank you so much for joining us. And I will see you all next time.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.